Valley. Tonight's star, Miss Grace George.
Hi-ho, everybody. This is Rudy Valley and Company. Miss George, who would certainly be included in anyone's list of the country's 10 best actresses, will be heard in the scene from her current success, the revival of Somerset Maugham's ironic comedy of marriage, The Circle. In her support, you will hear Dennis Hoey and Cecil Humphreys. Tonight's interviewee is
George Goldsmith, chairman of the Theatrical Artists Representatives Association,
one of New York's top theatrical agents who gives us a behind-the-scenes look at the theater and its workings. Tonight's comedians,
J.C. Flippin and Tommy Riggs,
who use vastly different methods to woo your chuckles and guffaws. To these add,
Irving Caesar, safety songster,
who brings with him tonight 16 boys from public school number 10 uptown, and a special gift offer of interest to all boys. Put them all together and they spell, we hope, a good show, beginning now. Our opening tune, a new one, first in the air, One More Dream, dedicated to two lovely dreams, two winners of the beauty contest of the Washington Times, Washington, D.C., Miss Betty Gray and Blanche Brewer, who are chaperoned tonight by our good friend, Walter Winchell, in the front row of the balcony. One more dream, and the girl is mine. For tomorrow we go marching down the aisle. We'll be on our way to heaven when the rice begins to pour. After dreaming for a lifetime, this is what I've waited for. Just one more dream, and the sun will shine. One and one make two, and two makes life worthwhile. Going to get that country cottage where the rambling roses twine. One more dream, 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 and the girl is mine. And Betty Lou Barry. Tommy's first movie, Goodbye Broadway, opens at the Palace here in New York tomorrow. And Tommy is a bit worried because tomorrow is Friday the 13th. But according to Betty Lou, Friday is really lucky because the next day is Saturday, and Saturday there isn't any school. Enter now Tommy and or Betty Lou.
Tommy.
Yes, Betty Lou. What's on your mind tonight?
Well, you know, I have two whole dollars saved up in my penny bank now.
Two whole dollars? My, my.
Yes, and you know Bobby, the little boy next door?
Yes. What about Bobby?
Well, if I tell you something, will you promise not to tell?
Well, not a word, Betty Lou. Cross my heart.
Well, then, today Bobby proposed to me, so there, too.
Little Bobby proposed to you? You mean he proposed marriage?
Yes, of course I knew he loved me, but I never knew he loved me that much.
Well, that certainly is something, but what's the $2 in your bank got to do with it?
Well, do you think maybe he just wants to marry me for my money?
Well, I wouldn't know about that. But when little Bobby proposed, what did you say?
Oh, I said, this is so sudden. And then Bobby said, is it? And turned some more somersaults, too.
He was turning somersaults while he proposed to you?
Oh, no, he did that while he was standing on his head.
He proposed to you standing on his head? Well,
oh, yes, he's awful romantic.
I can see that, but just how did all this finish?
Well, while I was thinking it over, he got a ride on the back of the ice wagon, and that's as far as it went, too.
Well, maybe it's just as well.
I think so, too, because he doesn't like my dog, Snopsy.
Well, I can't say that I blame Bobby for that. The time you invited me to that little picnic in your backyard, well, your dog kept snapping at me all the time I was eating.
Well, you can't blame Snuffy for that.
Why not? He acted as though he really wanted to bite me.
Well, how would you feel if someone was eating out of your plate, too?
Oh, I see.
But, Mr. Tommy, don't you think he's a really very nice and beautiful dog?
Well, I will say I've never seen one quite exactly like him, Betty Lou. What kind is he?
Well, I think he's a fox terrier spaniel, French poodle police dog.
Well, I shouldn't be at all surprised.
And he's real healthy, too, because his nose is cold. Are you healthy, Mr. Tommy?
Well, certainly I'm healthy.
Let me feel your nose.
Now, listen, Betty, you just confine yourself to your dog's nose. And another thing, don't you know that you shouldn't pull your dog's tail the way you were doing yesterday?
I wasn't pulling it. I was just holding him by it.
Holding him by it?
Yes, he was doing the pulling.
Well, he can't be a very smart dog.
Well, he's smarter than he was before we took him to the country last Saturday.
Well, yes, I imagine his first trip to the country was quite an education.
Yes, but I'll bet he was sorry he went because he snapped at a bee.
He snapped at a bee? And what happened?
Well, from the way he hollered, I guess the bee must have sniped right back at him, too. Don't you?
Don't I what?
Don't you wish you'd been along with us, because my uncle's got a whole big farm, and that's where we went. And gee whiz, we had a great big dinner, too, Golly Ned.
With strawberry shortcake for dinner, I'll bet.
Oh, no, not me, because even if I like strawberries, they make me come out in spots all over.
Well, what did you have for dessert?
Ice cream and pickles.
Ice cream and pickles?
Yes, because I knew if I ate the ice cream and pickles, I would dream about the strawberry shortcake today.
Well, I suppose you had a hard time keeping your eyes open after that great big country dinner.
I had what?
I said, well, after dinner, didn't you feel something that starts with S?
Oh, yes, I got spanked.
You got spanked on a full stomach?
Oh, no, Daddy turned me over.
Well, just what were you spanked for? Something you said?
Oh, no, I got spanked for something I didn't say.
Well, Betty Lou, little girls, they don't get spanked for things they didn't say.
Well, I didn't, for something I didn't say about the cow's husband, too.
The cow's husband? Oh, you mean the bull. Well, what about the bull?
Well, I was sitting on the fence watching Daddy and Mommy trying to find the four-leaf clover when I saw him coming.
The bull, he was coming for your daddy.
Yes, so I said, Daddy, guess what?
You said, guess what, and what did your daddy say?
He said, don't bother me, I'm busy. So I said, you'd better guess what. But he just told me to be quiet. See, I'm busy.
Well, so?
So I kept quiet. And I just sat there and waited, too.
With that mad bull rushing at your father? Well, good heavens, what happened then?
Oh, nothing much. Mommy said, oh, the bull said moo, and Daddy said, ouch, and there he was over the fence, too.
I know it, I know it. This time it's real. It's thrilling, so thrilling, the way I feel. Love before was different. I just played a part. But this time it comes right from the heart. Pretending is ending, this time it's real. Forever and ever, time will reveal. We were lucky, darling, when fate turned the wheel. I know it, I feel it. this time it's real. Just before Mr. McNamee's eulogy of Royal Gelatin Products was This Time It's Real. We now come to Benny Goodman's latest tune called Don't Be That Way. It features our own little Benny Goodman, Jimmy Lytell, at the clarinet. Don't Be That Way. One of America's great actresses, Miss Grace George, in a scene from Somerset Maugham's distinguished comedy, The Circle, with Dennis Hoy and Cecil Humphreys. The Circle was first produced in 1921. It has been revived by William A. Brady this year to great critical and popular acclaim as a co-starring vehicle for Miss George and Tallulah Bankhead. We are honored to present Miss Grace George. Thirty years before our curtain rises, an event occurred which scandalized English society and ruined two brilliantly promising political careers. Beautiful Kitty Cheney, wife of Clive Cheney, ran away with her husband's best friend and political mentor, Lord Porteous. That was 30 years ago. Now Kitty is a gay little lady with dyed red hair who cannot forget that she was a pretty woman. She still behaves as if she were 25. Lord Porteous, whom everyone expected would be prime minister someday,
is a grumpy old boy with troublesome false teeth. The years have been kinder to Clive, however. He is bitter, but still handsome and forceful. As our curtain rises, the three parties to the great scandal have met for the first time in 30 years at Cheney's country house.
Huh. Quite a family gathering, by George.
Isn't it?
Yes, I was just thinking. We make a very pleasant picture of a typical English home.
Let me tell you, Clive, I don't like your manner.
Oh, I'm sorry for that. I'm afraid I can't offer to change it at my age.
I don't know what you want to be hanging around here for.
Natural attachment to my home.
If you had any tact, you'd have kept out of the way while we were here.
My dear Huey, I don't understand your attitude at all. If I'm willing to let bygones be bygones, why should you object?
Confound it all, they are not bygones.
Well, after all, I am the injured party.
How the devil are you the injured party?
Well, you did run away with my wife, didn't you?
No, don't let's go into ancient history. I can't see why we shouldn't all be friends.
I beg you not to interfere, Kitty.
I'm very fond of Clive.
Ah, you don't care two straws for Clive. You only say that to irritate
me. Not at all. I don't see why he shouldn't come and stay with us.
I'd love to. I think Florence's springtime is delightful.
Heavenly.
Have you seen Heath?
I never liked you. I don't like you now, and I never shall like you.
Oh, now that's unfortunate, because I liked you, I like you now, and I shall continue to like you.
Ah. You know, there's something very nice about you, Clive.
Well, if you think that, why the devil did you leave him?
Are you going to reproach me because I loved you? Oh, how utterly, utterly, utterly detestable you are.
Now, don't quarrel with one another.
Oh, no, it's all his fault. I'm the easiest person in the world to live with. But really, he'd try the patience of a saint.
Now, come, don't get upset, Kitty. You know, when two people live together, there must always be a certain amount of give and take.
I don't know what the devil you're talking about.
Well, it hasn't escaped my observation that you are a little inclined to squabble. Many couples are. I think it's a pity.
Would you have the very great kindness to mind your own business?
It is his business. He naturally wants me to be happy.
Yes, I have the very greatest affection for Kitty.
Then why the devil didn't you look after her properly?
Oh,
my dear Huey, you were my greatest friend. I trusted you. It may have been rash.
It was inexcusable.
I don't know what you mean by that, Huey.
No, don't try and bully me, Kitty.
Oh, I know. I know what you mean.
Then why the devil did you say you didn't?
When I think of what I sacrificed for that man, and for 30 years I've had to live in a filthy marble palace with no sanitary conveniences.
Do you mean to say you haven't got a bathroom?
I've had to wash in a tin tub.
Oh, my poor Kitty, how you've suffered.
Suffered?
Really, Kitty, I'm sick of hearing of the sacrifices you made. I suppose you think I sacrificed nothing. Why, I should have been Prime Minister of England by now if it hadn't been for you.
Oh, nonsense.
Shouldn't I have been Prime Minister, Clive?
Well, it was certainly the general expectation.
I was the most promising young man of my day. I was bound to get a seat in the cabinet at the next election.
Oh, they'd have found you out just as I found you out. I'm sick of hearing that I ruined your career. Why, you never had a career to ruin. Prime Minister. Why, you haven't the brain. You haven't the character. Has he, Clive?
A cheek push and a gift to the gab will serve very well instead, you know.
Besides, in politics, it's not the men that matter. It's the women at the back of them. I could have made Clive a cabinet minister if I'd wanted to.
Clive?
Yes, with my beauty, my charm, my force of character, my wit, I could have done anything.
Clive was nothing but my political secretary. When I was Prime Minister, I might have made him governor of some colony or other. Western Australia, stay out of pure kindliness.
And do you think I would have buried myself in Western Australia? With my beauty, my charm?
Or Barbados, perhaps.
Barbados? Barbados can go to Barbados.
That's all you'd have got.
Oh, nonsense. I'd have India.
I would never have given you India.
Yes, you would. You would have given me India.
I tell you, I would not.
Well, the king would have given me India. The nation would have insisted on my having India. I'd have been a vice-reign or nothing.
I tell you that as long as the interests of the British...
Oh, Huey, your teeth are coming down again.
I know that. We'll continue this conversation later.
Oh, it's too much. I can't bear it anymore. I put up with him for 30 years, but now I'm at the end of my tether.
Now, calm yourself, my dear
Kitty. No, I won't. I won't listen to a word. I've quite made up my mind. It's finished. 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 Oh, Clive. I was so touched when I heard that you never lived in this house again after I left it.
Well, the cuckoos have always been very plentiful. Their note has a personal application, which I must say I found extremely offensive.
And when I saw that you never married again,
I couldn't help thinking that you still love me.
Well, I'm one of the few men I know, Kitty, who is able to profit by experience.
In the eyes of the church, I'm still your wife. Clive, I'm willing to return to you.
My dear Kitty, I couldn't take advantage of your momentary vexation with Hughie to let you take a step which I know you would bitterly regret.
I think I've sown my wild oats, Clive.
Oh, I haven't, Kitty. I was a good young man.
I know.
And I'm very glad because it enabled me to become a wicked old one.
I beg your pardon. Explain yourself, Clive.
When you ran away from me, Kitty, I was sore and angry and miserable. But above all, I felt a fool.
Oh, men are so vain.
But I was a student of history, and presently I reflected that I shared my misfortune with very nearly all the greatest men.
Well, I'm a great reader myself, and it's always struck me as peculiar.
I felt I'd done my duty by society, and I determined to devote the rest of my life to my own entertainment. Parliament had always bored me excessively, and the scandal of our divorce gave me an opportunity to resign my seat. I've been relieved to find that the country got on perfectly well without me.
But has love never entered your life?
Well, now tell me frankly, Kitty, don't you think people make a lot of unnecessary fuss about love?
It's the most wonderful thing in the world.
Do you really think it was worth sacrificing so much for?
Well, I don't mind telling you, Clive, that if I had my time over again, I might flirt a little bit. But I should not leave you.
Well, for some years, I was notoriously the prey of a secret sorrow. But I found so many charming creatures who were anxious to console that in the end, well, it grew rather fatiguing.
And since then?
Well, since then, I've allowed myself the luxury of assisting financially a succession of dear little things in a somewhat humble sphere between the ages of 20 and 25.
You know, I cannot understand the infatuation of men for young girls. I think they're so dull.
It's a matter of taste. I love old wine, old friends, and old books, but I like young women.
Oh. You're a wicked old man, Clive.
That's what I told you, but by George, I'm a happy one.
Well, there's only one course open to me now.
What's that?
To go and dress for dinner.
Capital, I'll follow your example.
WEAS, New York.
Lord Porteous is played by Dennis Hoey. Clive Cheney by Cecil Humphreys. To both of them and to Miss Grace George, our thanks for their fine performances. The Royal Desserts Hour proceeds, encountering in the near future J.C. Flippin, George Goldsmith, and Irving Caesar. This week, Mr. Caesar's offering has a very special nature, as you will shortly learn. Irving and all of us are gratified by the interest taken in his songs of safety by schools all over the country. Tonight's new song is an example. Irving Caesar and the Safety Patrol March.
Shout hooray, hooray, hooray for the Safety Patrol. When they say, okay, the way is clear, we obey and say we're glad they're here. Shout hooray, hooray, hooray for the Safety Patrol. This is why our parents aren't nervous. We make safety our goal. And they're glad to know we're at the service of the Safety Patrol. Stop, look, listen. Those are three commands. We must stop and look and listen. We must watch the patrol boys' hands. Use your eyes and ears when walking. When you're crossing streets, stop talking. Watch the red lights, green lights, headlights. No matter where, take care. Shout hooray, hooray, hooray for the Safety Patrol. When they say, okay, the way is clear, we obey and say we're glad they're here. Shout hooray, hooray, hooray for the Safety Patrol. This is why our parents aren't nervous. We make safety our goal. And they're glad to know we're at the service
of the Safety Patrol.
If I understand it, Irving, that song is the official song of schools, boy, safety patrols all over the country.
Yes, Rudy, and they've honored me by adopting it. And I've been going around to schools teaching it to members of safety patrols.
Supposing you tell us what a safety patrol is.
Well, it's an organization of schoolboys who pledge themselves to work for safety, Rudy. I thought you might like to meet some of our safety patrolmen, so I invited 16 boys from the safety patrol of New York Public School Number 10 Uptown to be my guests this evening. Hey, gang, come on in. Come on. There they are. Quiet, quiet, everybody. Oh, hey, quiet, everybody.
Yeah, man.
How about the good old public school number 10 yell? Let's have a yell for Rudy Valley. One, two,
go, yo, go. Digga, digga, do. Rudy Valley, where for you? Hi, hi, hi. Holy, holy, ho. Get him open, get him open. Yeah, Valley.
Thank you, men.
All right. Now, class, attention. Before we proceed with a singing lesson, I'd like to review what I told you boys up at school. What did I say was the most important thing a singer should learn?
I know, Mr. Caesar. Good diction.
What was that?
Good diction, Mr. Caesar.
Is that correct, class?
Yeah, man.
Some enthusiasm, Rudy. It's really wonderful. Now, class, why does Mr. Valley have such good diction?
Because he studied hard and went to Yale.
Correct. That's right. Now, can any of you boys recite a poem for us? Come on now, anybody.
I can, Mr. Caesar.
And what's your name?
Kenneth Johnny Lee.
And what are you going to recite?
The Mr. Norr by Dixie Wilson.
I don't quite get it, Kenneth. Step right up front anyway and go to town.
The Mr. Norr. By Dixie Wilson. I like to fall the mist and all. I like the night owl's lonely call and wailing sounds of winds around. I like the gray November days and banded boughs that cool and swear against my pain. I like the rain. I like to sit and laugh at it and tend my cozy fire a bit. I like to fall the mist and all.
Well done. Well done. Now, that's not exactly what I mean by good diction. Now, I wonder if anyone else can improve on that. Whose hand do I see?
Robert Paul Young.
Robert Paul Young, step forward, man. You know a poem, Robert?
Sure, I know all of them, Mr. Caesar.
All of them? Well, go right ahead. You have the floor. Recite, Robert Paul. Let's have all of them.
My beautiful, why standest proudly by? It was a square effort. The breaking waves dashed high. Why is this forum crowded? What means this stirring room? Under a spreading chestnut tree, there is no place like home. Shoot if you must, this old gray head. King Henry of Navarre, if you awaken, call me early. To be or not to be. The curfew must not ring tonight. Oh, woodman, spare that tree. Charge, Chester, charge. On, Stanley, on. And let who will be clever. The boys sit on the burning deck. But I go on forever.
Good. That's very good. Very. That's fine. Now, look. I'm sorry we haven't time for more of that. But we're here to sing. Now, remember about diction. Are you ready, class?
Okay.
Let's go.
Yeah, man.
Obey, and they will gather here.
You have just heard the Boys Glee Club of Public School Number 10 sing the Safety Patrol March. This marching song for boys is Irving Caesar's latest contribution to the safety campaign, which is doing so much to protect young lives and small limbs. Surely every mother and father will want to join Irving Caesar's great safety crusade by sending for a copy of this safety song before next Thursday. The complete words and music have been published especially for the Friends of Royal Desserts in regular sheet music style, easy to play and easy to learn. And with it, we'll send another reminder of safety to safeguard children who must cross streets going to and from school. It's a handsome Royal Safety Patrol emblem to wear. They'll wear this handsome pin proudly. It'll be a prized possession. And this colorful emblem, like the song, will impress upon the children the importance of crossing.
I love to whistle, 'cause it makes me merry, makes me feel so very. I love to yodel everywhere I go. Yodel, 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 yodel. Early to bed, early to rise, makes you healthy, wealthy, and wise. But I found out, I know it's true, a whistle does much more for you. So I love to whistle. Troubles won't come near me, especially when they hear me. It takes all kinds of people to make a town like this, New York. We submit in evidence this evening a definitely New York and a Hollywood type. The theatrical agent, represented by Mr. George Goldsmith of Briscoe and Goldsmith, Dramatic Consultants. If you have been reading about the movie exhibitors' protest against high star salaries in Hollywood, you will have noticed that the stars replied to the attack through their agents. The agent is an extremely important figure in the entertainment picture. And Mr. Goldsmith is an important agent. At one time dramatic editor of the New York Herald Tribune, he combines an encyclopedic knowledge of the theater with the business acumen and diplomatic talent so essential in theatrical negotiation. In the early years of this program, his services as an intermediary with dramatic stars were invaluable to us. Most of Broadway's great names made their first radio appearance here with George holding one of their hands and I the other. This, ladies and gentlemen, is George Goldsmith. Agent. George, in spite of my lengthy prologue, I suspect that a great many of our listeners have only a hazy notion of what you do for a living. What is an agent?
An agent, Rudy, is a man who gets a job for an actor and in return is paid a percentage of the actor's salary. I regret to tell you that he is sometimes referred to vulgarly as a flesh peddler. He isn't always beloved by the manager he importunes on behalf of the actor, nor by the actor who has to pay his commission for services rendered. We all hate to pay the doctor's bill after the operation is over. But neither producer nor artist could get along without him very well, and they know it.
Why couldn't they? Why is an agent?
Agents are necessary because artists are not good businessmen, Rudy. An actor can't tend to his acting and also make all the necessary valuable contacts he needs in a business way. Usually, he cannot negotiate for and set a value on his own services without embarrassment. The agent acts as a buffer between the delicate artistic epidermis and the slings and arrows of outrageous producers. Then, too, the agent's specialized knowledge of who is available for what and when and how much is of genuine value to the producer as well as the artist.
Personally, George, I've used agents very little during the last 7 years. I've made most of my own decisions myself, but on occasions, I've used them on occasions.
Well, you see, Rudy, you're a most unusual actor. You're one of the few I know who is also a good businessman. A heritage, no doubt, from your Yankee forebears?
No doubt, or perhaps from the French side. Who knows?
In a great many cases, as you know, Rudy, the man responsible for an actor's success is that actor's representative. Other people usually get the credit for the discovery and development of stars. But if you look closely, you'll almost always find an agent lurking modestly in the background.
Waiting around for his 10%.
Only 5 in the theater, Rudy. 10 for pictures and radio. But whatever it is, he earns it. For example, a colleague of mine in Hollywood manages the business affairs of a certain very famous star. A year or so ago, he confided to me that the star was slipping and her contract was coming up for renewal. I asked him what he was going to do. I'm going to demand a $50,000 raise, he said. He did, and he got it. Did he earn his 10%?
Of course he did. What do you think about this Hollywood salary argument, George?
Well, obviously, Rudy, I can't express an opinion about the specific cases mentioned by the exhibitors. But in their fundamental argument, I think the exhibitors are right. After all, they are the boys who sit behind the box offices in every picture house in the country. There is no question in my mind but that enormously excessive salaries are paid to many stars at the expense of new talent development.
You believe the development of new talent is neglected in the movies?
I don't think anyone questions it. Why, Rudy, I know scores of attractive, talented young people who have taken screen tests, gone to Hollywood, and sat around doing nothing, month in and month out, until their options were allowed to lapse. At best, they pose for publicity stills and play small parts in B pictures that should never have been made in the first place. Only in very rare instances are they given a chance, which means a good part in a feature production. The theater often seems inhospitable and difficult, Rudy, but it offers the talented youngster, once he gets in, far more opportunity to show what he can do.
Don't you think that that should be pointed out to screen-struck young people?
They've begun to find it out for themselves within the last year or two. You may say that I'm prejudiced in favor of the theater, and I'll admit that I like the kind of acting that can't be done anywhere but on a stage. To me, the most interesting new development in the theater today is the eagerness of young people to work in the theater for its own sake and not merely as a springboard for Hollywood.
You've noticed a definite trend in that direction?
But definitely. Young players are actually turning down screen tests and movie contracts in order to work on the stage. They've seen too many of their friends come back from that golden California sunshine filled with discouragement and bitterness.
George, a few moments ago you used the phrase, once the youngster gets into the theater. Let me ask you a question. Let me ask you a question about hopeful young men and women that are always asking me. How can I achieve a career on the stage?
Do you find that question embarrassing, Rudy?
Of course I do.
Well, so do I. Not because I can't answer it readily enough, but because I know the answer isn't what the young hopeful on the other side of my desk wants or expects to hear.
The answer is discouraging, isn't it?
I'm afraid it very often has to be. Most of the girls and boys who come to see us haven't a chance, or I might say a right, to play on any stage. That's usually what I have to tell them.
But they never believe it. Never.
They're all sure they have the looks, the talent, the very special qualifications necessary to a successful stage career. Useless to tell them that there are already 5,100 holders of equity cards now, licensed actors, so to speak, and that not more than a third of that number worked this season.
When they persist, what do you tell them?
Well, I tell them that the only way to get on the stage is to have patience and perseverance. They should follow carefully the news of the theatrical world, acquaint themselves with the plans of producers, and present themselves regularly at the offices of managers in the hope that their type may strike the attention of the casting director.
That sounds like pretty hard going.
It is hard going. It means trudging about from office to office all day and every day, facing discouragement, refusal after refusal, sometimes being hungry, but always being well-dressed and never losing one's air of assurance. And let me tell you, Rudy, that air of assurance is probably the most difficult act the young actor will ever have to put on. He must not be brash or boastful or defiant. The manager can see through that in an instant. He must just be pleasantly assured. Not being an actor myself, I haven't the remotest idea how it's done.
Yet, new actors are found.
Of course. And our office has found a chair. In fact, the greatest kick I get out of my job is building successful careers. But it's only fair to paint the picture in its true colors. There may be fame and fortune at the end of the rainbow, but only the talented fighters finish in the money.
By the way, George, how much are we paying you for this appearance?
What?
I said, how much are you getting out of this?
Why, I didn't know there was any remuneration involved, Rudy.
George, what you need is a good agent. Now, the Rudy Valley Auction Units Corporation handles a few people for radio on the side. Of course, we charge a little more than 10%, but
So long, flesh peddler.
So this is Gay Paris, come on along with me. We're stepping out to see the Latin Quarter. Put on your old beret, let's sing the Marseillaise, and put our wine away like water. He'll take a gal who ain't and paint her as a saint for just a quarter. She poses just for art. She does it from the heart. She does it a la carte, e tartar. That gal from Marmontiers who's been around for years will show you souvenirs the soldiers bought her. She owes a lot of thanks to fight a lot of Yanks for what a lot of francs they brought her. Come on and party! That's how the Frenchmen sing. That's how they have their fling. That's how the Frenchmen swing the Latin quartier. They're 50 million strong, and they can't all be wrong. Let's all la la la.
One of Broadway's favorite jesters, always in the thick of it where the quips are flying like ping-pong balls over the tongue on Riot Lindy's. Never at a loss for a snappy comeback when the wits are clashing to the click of billiards at the Friars Club. J.C. Flippin.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Flesh Peddler. You know, Rudy, you and I have something in common. I don't have an agent either. I find it just as easy to lay off without one. But I do want to thank you for this marvelous reception, ladies and gentlemen. I'm proud to say this is a return engagement for me. I was on this program 5 years ago. But those boys of yours, Rudy, they were certainly glad to see me.
We always try to make everyone feel at home, Jay.
Why, they treated me like a king. As I walked in the studio, one fellow took my hat, another fellow took my coat, another guy took my watch. The union will hear about
this. Now, Jay, wait a minute. You wouldn't accuse one of my boys of taking your watch.
Look, Rudy, maybe time marches on, but my watch didn't walk away. I don't want to be a stool pigeon, and I won't say which one of the boys took it. But if I don't get it back after the program, I'm going to break his drums.
Jay, I hear you saw the Kentucky Derby last week.
No, I didn't see it, Rudy. To tell the truth, I don't go to races very much. You see, I'm afraid.
What are you afraid of? Losing money?
I'm afraid of the bookie man. Last week, I went to a racetrack. It was pouring rain. And being a wet track, I bet on a horse that was supposed to be a good mudder. She was a mudder, all right. In fact, she loved the mud. She loved it so much, she let all the other horses kick it in her face. That horse was the first trailer I ever saw with four legs. She was so far back from the other horses, when she passed the grandstand, the jockey looked over and said, "Hey, which way'd they go?" But in the next race, Rudy, I bet on a 2-year-old filly. But by the time she got home, she was 5. What a horse. Her name was Striptease. I bet on her to show. She threw the jockey at the post. She threw the saddle off at the half. The bridle off at the 3/4. And for an encore, she tossed off the $2 I had on her nose. That's the last time I'll ever play a horse in the Minsky stable. I didn't mind losing the race, Rudy, but when she walked over to Spencer Tracy's box and said, "Circle 6, 6,000, I got jealous.
What's this about going to California, Jay? What happened to your last picture?
Well, I'm sorry, Rudy, but I never made a picture.
Come, come, Jay. Every comedian talks about his last picture.
But I never made a picture.
Then you'll have to tell us about the picture you didn't make.
Oh, that one. Oh, now there wasn't a picture. The critics gave it so many stars it was cloudy for days. I had a lot of fun not making that picture. The work I didn't do wasn't so hard. The toughest part of the job was not kissing Myrna Loy. And I didn't like not getting paid. But the picture was so good with me not being in it that they picked up my option not to make six more. And believe me, Rudy, it's nice work if you don't get it.
I imagine you would photograph rather well. How do you screen?
Well, did you ever see Tyrone Power?
If you look like Tyrone Power, Jay, I look like Clark Gable.
Mister, it's a deal. I really did go to California on my vacation, Rudy, and I saw them make pictures. One day they had a lot of trouble. The cameraman went on strike. They were photographing Madeline Carroll in a bathing suit, and they struck for longer hours. But the biggest kick I got out in Hollywood was meeting some of the stars. I met that little French actress, I can never think of her last name. And Bing Crosby and his family. Bing has a male quartet of his own now. He had to give up playing golf. It got so every time he yelled four, people thought he was bragging. He has a lot of fun with his children, though. Last time I saw him, he was teaching them to throw rocks at tax collectors. And there was a lot of excitement when I was out there, too. A prominent Hollywood doctor had disappeared. The doctor dropped right out of sight. He was last seen telling Martha Ray to say, ah.
Jay, you must have seen a charter member of our alumni out there. Charlie McCarthy?
Oh, yes, really, Charlie McCarthy. Charlie had an accident. He was bitten by a timber wolf. They called in a tree surgeon. The doctor gave him a shot of wood alcohol and bundled him up in a lumber jacket. Before I left, I said, now, don't pine, Charlie. Spruce up. So he took my advice, and now he's feeling oak. But speaking of young McCarthy, Rudy, I played hooky from Broadway the other day to see a ball game. Tell me this. Did you ever see two colored teams play baseball?
No, I don't think I have.
Well, brother, now that's something. I walked up to one little colored boy playing third base, and I said, what's the score, son? He said, 14 to nothing. I said, favor who? He said, favor them. I said, well, they're beating you kind of bad, ain't they? He said, no. We ain't been to bat yet. Well, I guess everything that could have possibly happened in a ball game happened in this one. Long about the eighth inning, the bases were loaded. A big colored boy got up. The pitcher threw the ball to the umpire. I said, ball one, inside. Found a pitcher, threw another to the umpire. I said, ball two, outside. Found a pitcher, put a little more stuff on this last one. Threw it over to the umpire. I said, ball three, too high. Finally, this pitcher put everything he ever expected to have on his last one. Over it come the umpire. I said, ball four, you out. Colored boy said, ball four, I'm out. I said, you hear me? Ball four, you out. He said, well, how come I'm out? He says, because the bases is full and I ain't got no place to put you. That's how come you're out. But Rudy, here's a story I like. A colored couple got married. They came back off the honeymoon. The husband went to the hardware store and he got a wash tub, a washboard, and a big tall mirror. He brought them home, put them in the parlor, and says, there he is, honey, and you can take your choice. She says, what do you mean? He says, well, you can either take the wash tub and the washboard and go to work, or pull up a chair in front of that mirror and watch yourself slowly starve to death. Another colored boy I know walked down to his girl's house. He knocked on the door and he said, Mama, will you marry me? She said, no. He said, well, right then and there, there's nothing else for me to live for. I'm going to commit suicide. I went out to the drugstore and I got myself a bottle of carbolic acid. Went out to the hardware store and got myself some gasoline, a box of matches, a gun, and a rope. Boy, I'm sure going to die. Said, I went down the river and I got in the boat and I rowed up the river. I come to a big tree with a limb sticking out over the water. I put the rope around my neck, pulled myself up, drank the carbolic acid, poured the gasoline all over me, lit a match, put the gun in my head, blew it. But luck was against me. Man, I missed my head, hit the rope, fell down the river, put out the fire, swallowed so much water, I threw up the carbolic acid. If I hadn't been a darn good swimmer, I'd have drowned.
for my fellow staff officer, Colonel Jim. Somewhere a voice is calling.
Probably nothing affects your well-being as much as the food you eat. Mothers of growing children are especially careful.
Stop, look, listen. Those are three commands. We must stop and look and listen. We must watch the patrol boys and use your eyes and ears when walking. When you're crossing streets, stop talking. Watch the green lights, red lights, headlights. No matter where, take care, take care. Shout hooray, hooray, hooray for the safety patrol. When you say, obey, the way it's clear, we obey and say we're glad to hear. Shout hooray, hooray, hooray for the safety patrol. That is why our parents are in service. We make safety our goal, and we're glad to know we're at the service of the safety patrol.
Before next Thursday, remember to send for your copy of Irving Caesar's Song of Safety, the Safety Patrol March, and the red and white Safety Patrol emblem all the boys and girls will be wearing. Because the Safety Patrols are so important, this song and the pin are both yours for only one Royal Desserts box front and 10 cents. Send for them before next Thursday. The address is 420 Lexington Avenue, New York City.
Next week, our company will be headed by Miss Jane Cowell in an original radio play of which Miss Cowell is herself co-author. The complete cast will include Beatrice Fairfax, questioned on the advice to the lovelorn business, Rags Raglan, new comedian, Paolo Spagnola, child pianist and composer, Irving Caesar, Tommy Riggs, and Betty Lou. This is Rudy Valley bidding you all good night.
Among the selections heard on this program, Latin Quarter was from Gold Diggers in Paris. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
The Rudy Valley Hour on the W.